change the world together. Welcome to the Snapcast, the podcast for all nonprofit professionals, bringing you interviews and amazing ideas for nonprofit leaders.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Nonprofit Snapcast. I'm extremely pleased today to be speaking with David Jernigan. David is the president and CEO of the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta. How are you, David?
Doing great. Thanks.
Thanks for joining me for this episode today. I'm looking forward to this topic.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
You wrote a blog piece that appeared in the Supporter Reports. I guess I can't call it a blog. We have to call it an article, right?
Yes.
About the importance of DEI and belonging and how that's sort of been a core, I want to call it a value or a core tenet or a core, a pillar for the Boys and Girls Clubs of Metro Atlanta from the very beginning. Can we talk a little bit more about that real quick, about how it's always been there?
Yeah, so, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Metro Atlanta has been around for over 80 years. And I think our mission, by its very nature, has been focused on serving young people in under-resourced communities across Metro Atlanta. I think in some ways you could make the case that this is an organization that's been in the racial equity fight for decades. And yet I think this past year has taught us that we as an organization still have work to do, as many organizations do, that are serving communities, particularly disenfranchised communities, that just because you're serving in those communities doesn't mean you don't have your own DEI work to do.
It's sort of amazing to me to hear you say that, because as you say, you've been in the business for a long time. Boys and Girls Clubs has been in the business for a long time. So what's it like to be in a social environment now that is actually paying a lot more attention to that cause, even though you've already been doing it for a while? If I were in your shoes, there would be a part of me that would be shaking my hands and saying, hello, I've been doing this for a long time now.
I think that's tempting for many people to say. And in fact, a conversation I've had with many of our board members who have really been wrestling with what is at the heart of the concern of the organization. So for context, I came in as the new president and CEO about a year ago. And these conversations around race and equity and the extent to which we were creating an inclusive culture as an organization were surfacing, frankly, even before the national conversations were really heating up following the tragic murder of George Floyd. And it became clear very early on that this was going to be a focus in our new strategic plan. But this past year, with the elevated conversation on race and equity across the country, it's only sort of in many ways further emphasized for us how important it's going to be and created the space for us to just have some conversations and perhaps accelerate work that was already kind of in motion, but was going to be necessary. But yet for many of our board members and some folks who have been in the organization for a long time, especially white leaders, frankly, who are on their own journey of understanding issues of race and equity, I think it's been a bit of a struggle, and it's been hard at times for them to understand completely why there's still work for us to do, why, for example, our language really matters and how we talk about the work, why diverse leadership really matters and matters now more than ever. In so many different aspects of what has become our strategic focus as an organization, it took some time for us to surface those things. But I think the journey has been valuable, and those conversations have led us to where we are today.
You've said that the past years taught us that our language is much more than just the words we put down on paper. Can we say a little bit more about that? I mean, and not just in terms of the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta, but for the nonprofit sector in general, like you say, we all have these lessons to learn. Yeah. What are some of the things we need to keep an eye out for as we rewrite the things that define us?
Yeah. So one of the things that we immediately started to grapple with as part of our strategic planning process was revisiting our mission statement. So our mission statement included the word saving kids' lives. And we spent some time unpacking what's underneath that. Why do we believe that we alone are saving kids' lives? And what does that suggest we believe about the role that their parents are playing, or the role that churches and schools and other community agencies are playing? And I think if you really are honest with yourself, you recognize that there are some assumptions underneath using language like that. There's a belief system about the communities that we serve that in many ways, harking back to sort of a white savior mentality. And I will say that I think for many nonprofits, it's tempting to go down this path of using language like that, because I think, particularly if you're relying heavily on philanthropic support, there is a temptation to really create a narrative that paints your constituents in the sort of bleakest form possible, so it can pull on the heartstrings of donors. But I think the journey that we've been on is recognizing that that language does damage, and unintentionally perhaps, and perpetuates a narrative that is not positive about the communities and kids that we serve, and requires us and to really take a completely different lens to the language that we use. And so we still have work to do. And, you know, just the other day, I was on a social media account that we have and saw some language that pinged me. And I said to our marketing team, we need to go back and look at this language. And we're going to do that really over the next year and look at every piece of collateral that we have to make sure that it's coming from a strengths-based perspective and that we're emphasizing the strengths that our kids and communities have and painting an honest picture of the role that we play within a village, within an ecosystem, a community, and don't try to position ourselves as the soul saviors.
So let me take the devil's advocate position here for a second. You know, we're talking about problems that have far-reaching consequences in terms of race relations. Some very negative things happen. Some very tragic things happen. How do you construct your language to fit around those topics in this way? I'm like you're saying, you want to emphasize the positive. You want to talk about the good things that you do. But how do you talk about the truth if the truth is sometimes dark?
Yeah, I don't think you run away from the truth. I think you provide context. So, you know, when I talk about the work that we do as an organization, I start with, this is an amazing city. Metro Atlanta is just an incredible place with so many strengths. And yet it's a city that has perhaps the greatest inequity of any city in our nation in terms of inequality. If you are poor growing up in the city of Atlanta or in Metro Atlanta, your chances of getting out of poverty are pretty slim, you know, statistically. And so I think being honest about that and then being honest about the role that we play, which as we've thought about our mission statement, it's really about igniting the unlimited potential of kids, but recognizing that potential is already in them and that it's our role to bring it out of them by creating safe and inclusive and engaging environments. And so I think the more that we can sort of balance our language with honest context, it's not that you run away from the truth, but it's that I think you don't overstate your role within that context, and that it's a community that has to help to overcome the systemic racism and the, you know, systems of oppression that have been leading to where we are today with so many of our communities.
So what does it mean to take Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta through this introspective process? It's an old established organization. Like you said, there's some players who've probably been around for quite some time. How do you get an organization to be, how do you get organizations to be openly introspective?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think for us, it started with just some honest dialogue and creating the space for the honest dialogue. You know, we were, as I mentioned, on a journey to sort of address issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion in our strategic plan. But the George Floyd murder, frankly, accelerated those conversations. And it was tempting at first to say, you know, let's approach this through the strategic planning process and not get caught up in the moment. But then I think we recognize as a leadership team, our community's hurting. There's pain right now, particularly for our employees. This is an organization that has largely African-American employees that are serving in our clubs. And they were needing a space to talk and process what they were experiencing. So that was the first thing, is just creating the space for people to talk. And then as we started to surface issues, figuring out how you communicate those issues and how you surface them, particularly for our board, for example, a group of stakeholders who are so committed to this work and have been in many cases 20 years committed to this work. How do you surface the conversation with them in a way that they can hear it, that doesn't put them on the defensive, but helps them to understand that this is the journey that they also have to be on with us, that it can't just be the employees or our youth on this journey? And I will say, you know, it comes down to leadership. I have a board chair who has been very committed. And from the minute that I brought some of these issues to his attention, was quick to say, well, we need to address this. We need to talk about it. I mean, has led his in his own way by being very vulnerable and saying at times, you know, this is a journey that I'm on and this is what I don't understand, and help me understand, and very publicly been vulnerable, which I think has created a space for us as a board to also grapple with issues. But I think the other thing is that you have to recognize it doesn't happen overnight, and it's a process, and it's a process we're still undergoing. But I think with leadership that's sort of pushing the conversations and creating the safe space to have the conversations, people will have more and more courage to speak their truths. And that's ultimately the kind of culture that I want to be a part of.
Sure, absolutely. So this introspective process, is this something that you guys are doing on your own, or are you hiring some third-party help to facilitate those conversations?
Yeah, we definitely needed some help from the beginning. And so we brought in a couple of different consultants who have helped us along the way. And I think that's really important that we do have a DEI council that is led by internal leadership, but an outside facilitator was able to sort of help facilitate the conversations and surface issues that may have been harder for others internally to bring up.
I'm fond of saying sometimes you have to get out of the city to see the smog.
That's right.
Yeah. So I have to ask, with the George Floyd event, I think you guys said that you did end up printing a Black Lives Matter t-shirt. Was there any fallout from that? Because I know that that must have been a heavy decision to make.
Yeah, you know, it seems like a small thing on the surface, but our leadership team and sort of stepping away after the protest and really thinking about, you know, what message can we send to our employees, to our kids, to our communities that were with them? We thought a lot about like what message we should be communicating and ultimately decided that a t-shirt was an opportunity for us to publicly state our position. We had done it in other ways, but we went down the path of creating a t-shirt. And honestly, before we printed it, we got a group of employees together and said, we want your input. What's the message that is unique to us? Should we use the Black Lives Matter message? And some of our employees, including some of our Black employees, pushed back and said, that's jumping on a bandwagon. What's our message? And then they grappled with it as a committee and then came back and said, no, this is going to be the message we're going to embrace. And so we went out with the t-shirt. We knew that there would be some, and you know, we were fortunate to be in 10 counties across Metro Atlanta. So you can imagine the diversity of perspectives across those 10 counties. A lot of donors from a lot of different political persuasions. And some, I would say largely, we've had nothing but support, but there have been a handful of folks that have reached out and said, I'm concerned that you're not supporting law enforcement, or one of our staff members who really was concerned about the messaging. And then a donor who said to me, you know, David, if you all continue to be political, I'm not sure I can continue to support you. And I had to explain to this donor, this isn't about being political. This is about putting a stake in the ground and advocating for the kids and communities that our mission calls upon us to serve. And I'm sorry that you view it as being political, but that's not at all how we are thinking about this as we printed this shirt. And frankly, it was one board member's statement to me that was our anchor throughout this process that said, David, these t-shirts that you have printed says to your kids that you matter. And that is ultimately what matters for us.
Yeah, that's a good way to underline the point. You've talked about the one donor who says to you, if you're going to be political, I'm not going to continue to support you. How do you craft your language then to speak to that person? How do you try to bring them around? Or is that the goal? Are you trying to bring them around, or is it?
We certainly, I think we want the support of as many folks as possible in Metro Atlanta. We rely heavily on philanthropic support to keep our doors open. And so, you know, we try to be sensitive about helping our donors understand the why behind the decisions that we've made and using, and frankly, the supporter report piece that we published was part of that, just helping folks understand the journey that we're on and bringing clarity to some of the decisions around language choice and mission statement, et cetera. And so I think, but I will say this, that, you know, when we ultimately made some of the decisions that we made, including the printing of a Black Lives Matter t-shirt and taking a public position, we knew that we might lose some donors, but ultimately, as any leader has to make the decision around, you have to stand by your values and you have to be willing to risk losing a few donors. And frankly, I believe we've probably attracted more who have seen the work that we have taken on and have said, I want to be a part of that. And so you sort of, you know, just hope that ultimately outweighs any donors that you may lose.
And I've heard that from other nonprofits over and over again, that they had a similar concern that they were going to lose people, and they may have, but they ended up gaining more than they lost.
I think that's our hope, at least.
Let me open up the scope of this conversation then. What would you say to other nonprofits as they start their processes, or as they may be in the middle of their processes and they're doing the introspection thing and trying to figure out how to move forward in a powerful way? Would you have any words of advice for those leaders and for those board members?
Yeah, you know, I had the unique advantage of coming in many ways as an outsider and, you know, coming in with a fresh perspective and really trying to create a space for people to just listen and to share. For folks who are in the seat today and perhaps some of what employees and constituents have experienced is at their doing, I think it is incredibly important to figure out a way to just authentically listen. I mean, at the end of the day, this is about creating a safe space for people to share their truths, to listen, and to show a level of empathy and compassion that allows your stakeholders to understand that you're taking their feedback to heart and you're going to do something with it. And I think every organization's in a different place and has different stuff they have to work on. For us, our stuff is clear. For others, it may not be as clear. But I think what I have found, at least in this organization and others that I've served in, is if you create honest dialogue, the stuff will surface pretty quickly.
Is this a data-driven endeavor?
Yes, we brought in a partner called Alaria that we brought in specifically to help us measure inclusion in the organization. So one of the things that's really hard at times is that the idea of creating an inclusive environment can feel a little fluffy. It can feel, if you're trying to take a strategic approach and trying to really target some specific objectives to go after, sometimes it's not clear what we should prioritize. Mm-hmm. And so we asked Alaria to come in, and they specialize in measuring inclusion. And they do that by creating a survey wherein employees give their experiences and share anecdotes of where they have felt excluded in the organization. So experiences of exclusion. And then they do a very sort of in-depth analysis and look for trends in those stories. And that produced for us some interesting insights that really took us beyond the surface of just looking at race and looking at, you know, gender and other ways that you might classify your employee base. For us, what we discovered is that the work, probably the toughest work we have to do, is really based upon the classification of employee status. And for us, it's our part-time employees, where we have a lot of work to do to create a more inclusive organization for them. And I don't know if we, you know, perhaps we would have discovered that in other ways, but taking a data-driven approach really helped put it in black and white in front of us and really has forced us to reckon with that. And I think it's been a healthy process for us to uncover.
Well, I've got to congratulate you guys on, you know, again, just the magnitude of what you have to accomplish, especially being an organization that, as you say, has been on the forefront of this fight for decades. I think it's amazing work that you do. The last question I have for you is that, and this is just personal curiosity at this point, you know, we're talking about diversifying and making an equitable place for everybody within leadership, within the employee structure. Do youth have a place on the Boys and Girls Club board?
Do you have a place on the board?
Or in leadership at all? It may not necessarily be a vote, but do they have a voice in
making... Oh, you said youth. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great question. You know, I think the organization has always taken a lot of pride in elevating youth voice. And we've given them a voice in programming. We've given them a voice where they've, you know, for example, we were focused on an arts program that was focused on theater arts. And they said to us, you know, we really are interested in digital technology and using music studios as an art form. Can we refocus this energy? And so we did listen to their voice in that perspective. I think this past year has taught us, though, that we have to go beyond programmatic decisions to elevate youth voice. We created a space for them recently after we did some focus groups with many young people following the protests last summer, where they said, we want our voices heard in a different way. And so we invited them to our all hands employees meetings, gave them a space to talk to us about, you know, their own concerns around race and equity and challenged us as an employee base. We put them on a national stage to even do that, and created as part of our annual gala last year, we kind of shifted the focus a little bit and encouraged them, talk about the issues that matter to you, and gave them a wide open mic in front of a very large audience to speak to issues that matter to them. And I think those are the steps we've taken to date. I think there's probably more for us to do to more formalize their voice in leadership. But there's no question that they have a critical role in helping to sort of set the direction for this organization.
Amazing. David, I got to applaud you and the work that you're doing with the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta. If a listener would have any questions for you to learn more about your journey, the journey of the club, how would you suggest they get in touch with you?
Absolutely. We welcome that. Our website is probably the best way to connect with us, which is Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta, or www.bgcma.org. You know, they certainly can reach out through our website or through social media, and we would love to connect with them.
Fantastic. Again, David, thank you. Thank you for being my guest today. I would love to revisit with you at some point in the future and talk some more about the Boys and Girls Club of Metro Atlanta.
Sounds great. Thanks for the invitation.
This has been The Snapcast. Thank you for joining us.
The Snapcast is a production of the Nonprofit Snapshot. Please visit us at nonprofitsnapshot.org to learn more about our consulting work and the ways we can help your organization continue to make the world a better place.